You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
Candace is a Silicon Valley pro with a track record for delivering brand strategy and operational excellence to help businesses do their best work. She's the founder and CEO of CP Jones Consulting, a strategy and operations practice that helps small businesses and entrepreneurs launch new products and services in the future of work. Through her consulting practice, Candace has also launched the sold-out 40 Hours for 40 Acres trademark program, a virtual boot camp that coaches Black women to build custom strategies, plans, and timelines to work more sustainably in their careers. In addition to consulting, Candace writes about a range of topics from life hacks to the future of work, often with a comedic twist. Her writing draws on her lifelong journey of combining systems, thinking, and a Black-ass common sense to deliver results for her clients, community, and self by any means necessary. She holds a Bachelor's of Science in Management Science and Engineering from Stanford University and an MBA from Stanford Graduate School of Business. She is based in Las Vegas, where she lives with her husband, her adorable son, and their rebellious dog.
You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
And what is in your coffee cup? What you drinking as we have this conversation today?
So I've gone back to basics and I am having water.
Some regular degular H2O.
Regular degular water. Didn't even put, you know, lemon in it, nothing like that. Just regular water. I've been treating myself quite a bit and I was like, I'm going to give myself this love offering of just some pure water.
So then we have to ask, when you treat yourself, what you drinking?
Something fermented.
Is there a specific fermented, or is there just like, we dabble in all? We diversify.
Yeah, I diversify. Surprise me. Yeah, it's fine.
I love it. Where are your people from?
My people are from California. I live in Vegas now, but my people are from California and I am fully California bred. Started in Southern California in LA and then made my way to the Bay, which I consider to be, you know, my true hometown and where my foundations were laid.
So is that why you're drinking so much water? Because you live in the desert now?
Probably. It's, I don't like to be ashy. I keep lotion everywhere that I go. And so I have to, you know, proactively moisturize my situation.
It's important. That Vegas desert. People don't, that Vegas, I've only been to Vegas at most three nights at a time. By the third night, I'm just like, I don't think I brought enough lotion.
Yeah, it's, you want the lotion, you want the chapstick. You know, you got to be proactive about it. It's really important.
Baby oils. Okay. So today we are talking about knowing your why and following it. I know that you and I've had this conversation on a personal level many, many times. My question to you is, when was the first time that you recognized that you needed to define your why in corporate spaces?
You know, I think I knew it for a while, right? It was a big part of what I did professionally. So under that, you know, values to goals to priorities, like all of that, that was a big part of what I did. Mm. But I think I really had to reckon with it. And it became real for me at the end of 2021, going into 2022. I think sometimes your body speaks to you and lets you know that something is coming. I really, you know, I'm a person. I follow science, studied engineering, did all of that stuff. But I think there is also something that is just intuitive as well. And at the end of 2021, going into 2022, I knew that changes were nigh. And so I got very clear about my own values, goals. I set milestones for myself. Like, it was a whole literal Google Drive that I created just for what am I going to do going into 2022? Yeah, because I said, look at this. Look, I'm my most important client. So if I'm going and I'm doing this for companies, right, telling them, let's sit down, figure out our priorities, our strategies, our risks, mitigations, all of those things, why would I not do that for myself? So I put myself through that exercise as well. And I'm very thankful I did, because 2022 came and said, hold my beer. And I think had I not been really clear going into that year, that I wouldn't have been able to fare as well as I did.
Let's take a step back. So you do this work 2021, you start actually executing on this, and you're like your own self-research, if you will, 2022, but you are a grown woman. So you were an adult pre-2021.
Tell me about Candace in corporate spaces pre-2021. Were you just going with the motions and not even thinking about what am I getting from this company? What are they getting from me? Does this bring me joy? Was it just like the robotic movement of waking up and going back to sleep and doing what the boss says? Or what was going on pre-2021?
Pre-2021, I was, I think, a bit more accommodating to the views, priorities, et cetera, of others. And so I think I had these ideas of, well, of course I have to go to business school. Of course I need to have this experience in these different industries, right? Like there was a playbook, but it wasn't my playbook. I think in 2021 is when I said, no, I can get in the driver's seat of this. I want to be intentional. I want to make sure that the things that I'm doing are ultimately aligned with my core values. And really, what are my core values? Are they still the same ones I had back when I was 21?
They were not.
Plot twist, no, they weren't. Exactly. So it was the first time that I think I really owned the agency that I had to decide what my path was going to be. I wasn't, you know, completely naive to it, but I don't think that I had enough discomfort until that moment to really say, no, I'm going to be more intentional and I'm going to do this on my own terms.
I remember it was 2017 when I started recognizing my why, and I was at work and something happened at work, which I remember, but I won't discuss right now. And I remember I went home to my apartment and I was like, why do I care so much about this thing that happened that I felt very disrespected in when I can't even look in the mirror and tell myself why I'm doing this job other than to pay my light bill? And I think unlike you, I didn't have the tools to like do the structured work, but that was the first day where I was like, something's got to change. And I also agree with you about the whole body response because y'all, I had my hairstylist who I've had for years, she started noticing that my hair was getting grayer. And she was like, you know, I'm not trying to judge you. Graying is beautiful, but I do find it interesting that you started this new job on this date and within 6 months, half your edges have become gray. And I don't think that's natural, sis. And so it took my hairstylist to be like, this ain't it. This ain't it. Fix it, Jesus.
Yeah. So, and it's so funny, right? Because even this idea of, you know, the why, literally the main question that you answer, I attended Stanford GSB for business school, right? The core question that we answer year over year is what matters most to you and why. So it's not that I hadn't had these moments of reflection, but it was the first time in 2021 that I really gave myself that space to be honest with myself about what actually mattered most to me and why. Not what I thought should matter most to me, not what I thought was going to look good on LinkedIn or sound good to my friends or sound good even to my family. But at my core, what are the things that matter most to me and why?
Was that on the business school application? Was that one of the essays?
It is.
Which is funny because Stanford undergrad, that's one of the questions on the application. And maybe I need to go back and read my 17-year-old response. But I do find it interesting that this is now full circle. And it's like, wait, that's actually a very deep-rooted question that at 17, I was like, I just got to fill this application out.
Exactly. But, you know, keep on living, right? You keep on living. And
so then here's the question then. You don't have to tell us your response on your application for Stanford Business School. But do you think that your why in that essay answer is the same that it is today?
It has evolved.
But the root is there.
The root is there.
Interesting.
I've always been a person who cared deeply about community impact and figuring out how we could marry some of these things that are maybe more analytical, right? Or thinking systems thinking to community and people impacts. That's always been something that was interesting to me. And now I'm just using it in a different way.
2022, we start implementing these same practices that you did in the corporate world. I think for everyone, we should ask you, what was your job in the corporate world? Because it sounds like it aligns very similarly to like you doing this work for yourself in your own personal time. What was your actual day-to-day job at one of these very, very large tech companies?
My work was always around strategic planning or operational, you know, management. Often I would sit with the business leaders, figure out what are the big bets? What is the what? And then I would have to translate that to the actual workforce and say, now, how do we get there? What's the best way for us to get there? And what might those trade-offs look like along the way? So I was in a similar strategy and ops capacity, right? Figuring out at the time for Meta, you know, what our priorities were going to be as it related to trust and legitimacy, right? Like some of those bigger questions. And especially at that time, woo, you know, those were some, and continue to be, right? Some really relevant questions. I was working with the leaders to figure out, you know, where could we have the biggest impact and how could we really support our people to get us there.
And so now we're using those same tactics that you would use talking to these leaders and just getting your day job done, figuring out your why. How did that translate directly? What does that look like, Candace at home, trying to map out her life with these same tactics?
So again, I had docs.
Yeah.
I had my charter doc.
I'm imagining the Candace Y slide deck. Yes.
I did. Of course. Of course. So I had my themes and focus areas. And if I'm remembering correctly, some of the major things were, you know, self, family, wealth, career. And so I had those focus areas. And then I started to figure out, okay, what is the vision for those things? And then what are some of the intermediate goals, right? Where do I want to be 12 months from now is usually the time frame I work with. And so then when I started to break that down of, okay, so what are the actual activities I need along the way? And what are the behaviors that I have that are supportive? What are the behaviors that I have that are not? Mm. What am I going to do to address those things? Like, I went through that whole process of really mapping that out. My goals, the, like I said, the risks, the investments, all of those things, and created a timeline for myself and an accountability system so that I could do it along the way. Now, just like, you know, what happened for a company, things change, right? So I went into the year thinking, okay, here are the things I'm focusing on. Here's the general roadmap of how I think I'm going to get there. And then I needed to adjust as life actually happened. And like I said, life happened.
Look, life be lifing, child. Life be lifing.
Yes, it does. It really does.
But it sounds like even with life lifing, you had the tools to be able to adjust. If you could tell us from this exercise, can you give us an example of one value?
Absolutely.
That you either learned or reaffirmed for yourself that you were like, this is a non-negotiable value in my personal life.
So I think for me what's probably most salient is family. So one thing I haven't explicitly said yet is that at the time that I was, you know, going through this exercise, I was pregnant. Unfortunately, that pregnancy didn't go to term, but that was also part of this forcing function for me of like, oh no, mama needs to get things in order and be clear about how we're going to govern ourselves in the year of our Lord 2022. So I knew that family was incredibly important to me, and that when I was looking at family, I was looking at both my immediate family unit with my husband and the child that I was expecting, and then also my extended family, which included my mother, who, you know, was disabled, had multiple health complications, and my brother.
And Rick
and
James.
I had,
y'all, we gotta stop. Forgetting the dogs. Y'all, Candace has a dog that probably is 6 pounds, and his name is Rick James, and he's my ultimate favorite. Yes. Gotta keep him in the narrative, girl. But go ahead, keep him in the narrative.
You're right. You're right. Yes. Shame on me for that erasure. And I appreciate you holding me accountable. I really do. But yeah, so I knew family was important to me, and I was thinking about it from those perspectives. And so I had my goals around, you know, planning for my child, including, you know, making sure that we were applying to the different daycares and, you know, financial planning and all of those things. I also had planning around making sure that my mother's household could be, you know, taken care of. I also knew that my brother was going to be applying to colleges. And so what I was going to need to do to make sure that he was able to get through that process, right? And I also had goals for my marriage, right? I had communication goals. I had things, areas I wanted us to grow. So I had these different things that I knew were incredibly important to me, and that family was a non-negotiable. And so as things unfolded in the year, right, different considerations with my career, like I said, I ended up losing that child. I found out my mother was, you know, in the last few months of her life. That really, you know, allowed me, it doesn't mean that it made those decisions easy, but I at least had clarity about what I was optimizing for, so that when I needed to assess those trade-offs and make tough decisions, I knew what needed to be done. And so for me, what that meant was I did end up, you know, quitting my job, you know, just being honest that I didn't think that it was going to support me to show up for my family, including my immediate family, in the way that I needed to, that I wouldn't be able to do those things at the same time. And if I had to choose one, I was going to choose my family. And so I ended up leaving my job and, you know, continuing to make decisions that allowed me to show up for the people that were ultimately my bigger why.
Since you brought it up, sis, I do want to pivot a little bit, and I want to talk about supportive partnerships that I do not think we discuss enough publicly, especially when it comes to women being in partnership with men. I think your husband is brilliant. I think he has a Kool-Aid smile, and I love it. And you laugh because you know I'm right. I think that part of his brilliance is how much he supports you and to use your language supports your why. And I wanted to hear from you about that, because I do think that for the people that want to be in partnership, partnership is not for everyone, and is not, and it should not be the ultimate goal for everyone. But for people who are in partnership, looking for partnership, what are your thoughts on that? Because it also sounds like maybe you didn't realize at the time, but you were very intentional about the human you picked to be in partnership with. And that maybe is also part of your why foundation. What do you think about that?
It's incredibly important. And I have to say, this is one thing I have to give credit to Stanford's Business School. The classes and events and programs that I participated in that specifically spoke to women who were on this business leadership trajectory emphasized the importance of the partner that you choose and making sure that the partner is going to be supportive of your goals and understands what that looks like on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, they talked about this in business school directly.
Oh, absolutely.
I love that. Okay.
And that the support or lack thereof is often a high predictor of the level of success you will achieve, right? And so for me, when I did end up meeting my husband, which was towards the end of my business school journey, he met a lot of that criteria. He was incredibly engaged in the tactical of just managing day-to-day life. When I graduated and needed to figure out, oh, well, I have some extra family members and we don't have the transportation, he was like, I'm there. I'm already on my way. Don't worry about it, right? The way that he showed up without even needing to be asked. He saw the need and he met it. It just let me know that he was the person I needed. I also know that I am someone, as you've probably, you know, gotten from this conversation so far, I'm very type A. I don't need somebody exactly like that. So there are times where he lends me that space to just be. And he encourages me to get out of my head and just be in that moment. He also lends me confidence in times where I do doubt myself. Let's be honest, being a Black woman in corporate is not for the faint of heart.
Girl.
Yeah. Mm. There are moments that will shake you to your core, to your very core. And having a husband who would come to me and say, do you know who you are? And would read me, but read me back to me, right? Like, let me show your resume to you. Let me show you the receipts, right? In those moments where I couldn't see it for myself, I needed that. And so I think it looks different. I think sometimes we have these different factors that come up, like, it's money, it's access, it's power. And those, all those things can be incredibly relevant. But again, you have to know what makes sense for you. And for what I needed, that balance that I needed, that support that I needed, that emotional safety I needed, the boldness that he lends me in the times that I needed most, those were the things that helped me to show up to be my best self. And so, yeah, the support of my husband has been a huge part of how I've been able to navigate everything. It absolutely has. And he has continued to show up as our life has continued to evolve, as we've welcomed our son now, as we've moved states, as, you know, when I lost my mother, he was right there next to me. When all of those things happened, he was right there next to me. And I will never take that away from him.
See, and that's why I asked, because I think that that's also part of the why, is that if you want to build this life, build this career that encompasses your values, and you want to be in long-term partnership with someone, and it's not a requirement, but strategically picking that person who also identifies similarly to that why or aligned to your why. As my husband says, your husband is great, except for he's a fan of the wrong soccer team. Separate conversation.
That's hilarious.
Because girl, I don't know if you know this, they're on rival.
Yeah, I picked that up. Yeah.
And girl, the text messages are wild. But yes, so, but other than that.
That's not too bad.
He's good people
to
meet.
I'll take it.
Okay, so when we're talking about why, I guess my question to you now is, because you now work with humans to identify their why. Why did you want to do that work after you did this work for yourself? And you are extremely intelligent. You are extremely smart. You got degrees for days. You could have done anything after you left that corporate job. You could have gone to another corporate job. I don't know, anything. And you decided that you wanted to actually support people in their journey of knowing their why. Why did you want to do that?
Honestly, I did it because I saw too many talented, dynamic Black women who were secretly hurting. Mm. that is why I chose the work that I do now. When I started my business, I thought that I was just going to do strategy and ops consulting. That's how it started. And I still continue to do that, right? But the coaching really came out of reconnecting with my community, reconnecting with friends and colleagues and folks that I'd met along the way who had these gleaming LinkedIn profiles and all of the accolades and, you know, just all of the normal signals of success. But when we had these one-on-one conversations, some of the private struggles that they had and how prevalent they were, let me know that there was another way I wanted to show up, that I wanted to create a space that was authentic, that was strategic, and that was supportive of them really charting the professional paths that they wanted. And for them to have that safe space to be like, you know what, I'm here for my bag, first and foremost. Cool. Then let's get you that bag. Or if they said, you know, I want to have enough space for my family, or I have a need for achievement, I like to reach new heights, whatever that thing is, for them to have a space where they could say confidently, this is what I want, and then to have the support and resources that they needed to get those things.
What other types of themes did you hear in those private conversations? Because I do think that when you think about what the audience considers high achieving humans, let's be very specific about that. And then you even subcategorize it by gender and race. I have found that some of the most high achieving people on a billboard are sometimes the most sad in private and vulnerable. Or I don't want to use the word sad. I don't want to generalize that, but just very in private, it's very different than what you would think that they are. Can you give us some themes that you heard in those conversations from these humans?
I mean, I think the one that stood out to me and was very alarming to me was how many actually had physical manifestations of the stress that they were dealing with on a day-to-day basis. So actual health issues, both physical and mental. I should probably also note, I think I mentioned earlier that I come from this family of, you know, really strong, powerful, intelligent women, but that they both died in their mid-50s, right? And so I do have this sensitivity to Jane Henryism, you know, these women who take on the world and it actually is crushing them and leading to premature demise. And so when I saw that that was still happening, and I had even experienced part of it myself, that really struck a chord for me. Physical and mental effects, incredibly high financial burdens, not just for themselves, but them being the safety nets often for their families and communities, right? And what that really meant in terms of the flexibility or lack thereof that they had with their career choices.
So just to be very clear about that, we have people who really feel like I have to keep going, like I think I can, because it's not just about my check. It's not just about my rent/mortgage or my light bill. It could be about Aunt Betty's light bill or, you know, cousin Tyrone's baseball practice bill. And that stress and that responsibility to financially hold everyone up.
Absolutely.
I don't have time to stop, even though I want to.
Absolutely. Right. So that financial pressure and being perhaps like the only one or the one of few in their communities who have access to that level of income and financial resource. Right. And so also the perception from those people that, well, you can't be angry about what's happening in your job. Look at how much money you're getting paid, right?
Candace, I keep telling people sometimes those Sunday dinners are not helpful, okay?
Yeah.
Sometimes that advice from Uncle Miles is not helpful.
Absolutely.
A lot of guilt comes with that. I hear that.
And then I think the last thing is this, being disoriented to the point of not even trusting themselves anymore, like experiencing gaslighting, experiencing the crooked room that Melissa Harris-Perry talks about, right? Being in these spaces where your sense of reality is so regularly questioned that you have a hard time even trusting your decision making and your perception anymore, that was a lot more common than what I would have expected, especially for people who are earning a lot and achieving these things based on the quality of the decisions and actions that they take, right? But that when it came to themselves, that they really didn't trust themselves to make decisions in their best interest. So those were some of the things that kind of stuck out to me when I had those conversations with folks, and just seeing how incongruent that was with their public personas, and that there really weren't many safe spaces for them to really reckon with that disconnect.
So how do you in your practice, I guess, break that down? Because I think a lot of this, and I could be wrong, a lot of this is also the emotional and the mental, right? I feel like before we even get to, okay, so here's the implementation plan of, you know, your next steps, a lot of like emotional conversations need to happen about, like, sis, you gotta let Uncle Miles go. Let him sit there and suck on that ham bone. Tell him that his, you know, his crocodile shoes look good. But you can't allow that to infiltrate your life because you have to live your life. So, like, how does that work out? Because that's some deep stuff. That's some deep-rooted generational stuff that you over here navigate.
One of the first things that I do with pretty much every client that I have is a values assessment, right? I give them space to reflect on what they were drawn to before they became corporate such and such. I give them space to communicate the things that they say to themselves in those quiet moments, as well as a very structured exercise of finding those themes that really speak to the things at your core that really matter to you. And then once we're able to identify those major themes, then we assess, you know, how well are you honoring those things in your life and work as it exists today? So that's the starting point. We're not going to create plans and all that before we know your why, because at the end of the day, you're probably not going to do it if it's not rooted in something of substance. And so I find that by giving people that permission to be honest about what they actually want and why and how well they're doing on those things, that's the critical starting point for us. And that's the space that many of us, the way that our lives are, the speed of our lives, the amount of things that we're carrying at once, that few of us really have that space and that support to do that for ourselves.
So Candace is also a phenomenal speaker. And I heard you speak one time where you said that basically you said, if you know your why and you know it deeply and practice it every day, because, you know, some people know their stuff and they're not, blessings to them. But if you practice your why on a daily basis, it is much easier for you to pivot when change happens, whether or not you are activating that change or the world is activating that change. Can you speak more to that? I find that very transformative.
Well, I mean, the reason that knowing your why is so helpful in those moments of change is that it allows you to assess trade-offs, right? I think oftentimes we're inundated with a lot of information, but not all. Well, I shouldn't say information. We're inundated with a lot of data. It's the usefulness that makes it information. So being able to suss out what is the relevant data that you have and how does that impact the decisions that you want to make, you're able to do that a lot better when you understand these North Stars, right? When you're able to understand these larger themes. So I think that's what makes it, you know, really helpful. The second is a lot of us can start things, but along the way, other things come that distract us and we ultimately don't get to the finish line. But if you're able to actually set aside some time where you said, no, here are the major things that matter to me. Here are the outcomes related to those that I'm marching towards. You know what's down the line. I find that folks tend to have more buy-in and accountability to actually continue, right? And to honor the plans that they've set for themselves. And then the last thing is when you reach your finish line, you actually care, right? Like you actually are fulfilled. You're actually satisfied with what you've done. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I would reach these, I achieve milestones, get these great results. There was always something that was kind of missing, right? Something that just wasn't quite as satisfying because I didn't care. That's why it wasn't as satisfying, because it really wasn't related to something that at my core I actually cared about. I was optimizing for themes and outcomes that were meaningful to other people, but that weren't truly meaningful to me, right? And so that's where I find that knowing your why becomes so important. You know what decisions to make. You're more likely to stick to it. And when you get there, you actually care. And it's worth it.
That's deep, because I think that many times, because we live in a world where since we're very, very small, we're taught what is valuable. Basically, the work that you're doing, I think, is really deconstructing our definition of value. And when we're younger, we're taught certain things are valuable. We're taught working at ABC company is valuable. We're talking about the title that you have is valuable. We're talking about the money that you may or may not have is valuable. And what you're saying is that we grow up with these values that are told to us, that are pushed into us, that are fed to us, literally and metaphorically. And then you become an adult. And the question is that, do you actually care about those values? And some people do, and that's wonderful. But if you don't, you doing all this work to adhere to values that you don't care about is actually a waste of your time.
Absolutely. And it's the what matters, but you also can't forget the why part.
Why it matters to you.
Okay. Let's say, you know, money. Money matters. But money is a tool. So what is it about that money that is meaningful to you? Is it because it unlocks freedom and flexibility? Well, then, you know, what you're doing there and the way that you're moving in your life is going to be very different than someone who is accumulating money for the sake of, you know, maybe supporting another initiative, a missionary, right? Where they're like, well, I can invest in this, right? You're going to, or you should move differently based on why those things are actually relevant to you, right? And how you actually see those things playing out. So we spend, you know, our first session or even part of that second session often, you know, really unpacking, getting clear about, yeah, these are the things that matter, but tell me a little bit more. What are you actually optimizing for? And oftentimes you find that it's a lot more integrated, right? They speak to each other. And yeah, like I said, it doesn't necessarily make the decisions easy, but it makes them clear.
Which is the most important thing. Clarity is so beautiful, especially as an adult. So beautiful. It's also very terrifying, but it's so beautiful. It's terrifying, y'all. Being an adult, I feel like being an adult and being clear on your boundaries, on who you are not, and from your work on why you do things. Long-term, beautiful and necessary. Short-term, it can be kind of scary.
And here's the thing. Some of our values, some of our whys are meant to be goals. I want to achieve X. Others are meant to be guardrails. They're meant to be the things that say, no, this is untouchable. So there were times in my life where the achievement vector, that's also very important to me, it was popping. And I knew that I was putting my foot on the gas for that, right? And family, for me, it was a guardrail. There was kind of a minimum level of support that I knew needed to be there no matter what, and that I wouldn't allow my pursuit of achievement to compromise those things. Now I'm in a place where I am more actively contributing to that family dimension. I have specific things that I am feeding into it, specific outcomes that I am trying to achieve. And so it will flex with time. It'll definitely flex with time. But I think it's important to give ourselves that space that, you know, to know they need to be honored and addressed, but to know that in different seasons of your life, you might choose to invest in them differently. But you just want to make sure you're clear that that's what you're doing.
My last question for you, since you brought up family, and you said earlier that you are a mom to a very gorgeous, gorgeous little baby with the best.
Oh, thank you. He gets it from his mama.
In the world. A plus cheek. Has your why evolved in the family bucket because you are now this parent to this cheeky human? Has it evolved, or has it stayed the same? I'm just curious.
You know, what I would say is I think it's become more integrated, because with the introduction of my son, it's like everything that I care about, everything that I hope for, all those things that matter to me are now like focused onto this one little person. So achievement matters to me. I want to make sure that I'm unlocking and unblocking those things for him. Financial security matters to me, right? Saving for him, right? These other things that in my worldview of these things that matter, I want to make sure that I am at least setting him up where he has access to those things. And if he can opt out if it's not as important to him, but it is at least available. I think that's my responsibility as his mother. And so I wouldn't say they've necessarily changed, but I am seeing that the lines are blurring a lot more.
And y'all, these kids are expensive, child, okay?
Whew.
These kids,
Lord have mercy,
are expensive.
Lord have mercy. Yeah, that labor and delivery. Yes. I told you about that when I was like, good Lord.
These kids and these bills.
Yeah, that's a small house right there.
I think what I love most about what you said there is that you raising him to opt in or out in that. So you feeling like it's your responsibility to set him up with tools, but then also raising him to know that he can pick the tools in the box that align with his why at different ages and moments. I doubt, you know, at his age, he's thinking about 401ks. If he is, we need to call Tamron Hall and get him on the show. But, you know, different moments in his life and different ages in his life that things are important to him. The fact that he has parents that are giving him the tools to basically decide the tool to opt in, opt out. But also him knowing that he has the safety net of coming back and saying, yo, I kind of chose the wrong tool yesterday. I need this one. And I think that's very, very beautiful.
And to find out what, like, I'm so excited to continue to get to know him once he starts to figure out his why. Like, just let me know what you want. You know, like, think about it, right? I'm employed to be like the ultimate hype woman, the strategic co-pilot of people. What do you think I'm gonna do for my child? As soon as he lets me know where we're going, activate. I got this. Like, all you have to give me a direction and I've got you, child. So yeah, like we're starting with what I know. And then he'll, you know, he'll color it in for us. He'll let us know where he wants to go. And I got you, son. I got you.
So where can we find you on the internet, on Harriet Tubman's internet? How can we follow you? What are you working on? How can we support it? How can we be a part of it? How can we sign up for your coaching? What's going on? All the things.
So I am primarily on LinkedIn and Instagram. So you can definitely follow me there. I am, you know, working on this initiative I'm calling ABCs of a More Perfect Workplace. And it was really born out of my work around organizational development and really understanding that intersection between structures and behaviors and how we can better support workers to do their best work, but also honoring their humanities along the way, right? And so ABCs is really an invitation for folks to contribute to that discussion and the best practices, the changes, all of the things that they think would really set folks up in this future of work to show up as their best selves and to achieve the business outcomes that also matter along the way. So all of that's on my website, CandacePJones.com. That's also the place where if you're interested in career transition coaching, leadership development coaching, you can also access it there. That's really my hub where you can see what I'm up to.
Thank you so much for being not only like doing the work, but also being a symbol to our community, to the Black women community, but also just to the world that you actually have the right to build a life, which includes personal and professional, that makes you happy, regardless if it doesn't make other people happy. And I think that's one of the hardest things to do as an adult.
Thank you. I mean, I appreciate all that you do as well and for sharing this platform with me and with so many others. I continue to be inspired by you, my friend.
You can listen to You Can Sit With Us episodes on Spotify. For more information, visit our website, LexiB.com, and our LinkedIn account at LexiB. And make sure to follow our podcasts on Instagram at SitWithLexiB. And don't forget to subscribe to our Spotify channel.